head coach of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Ross. Today I'm with Matt Jones, Kevin Harnett, Pat Forty. I'm with Anoush Sariat, Kristen Wall, United States Congressman John Yarman, Sarah Bohanser, and
welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Redding. The show airs every week exclusively here on the Louisville.am Podcast Network. Rick's ready to start ranting and raving about his hometown right now. So, here's Rick.
And this is Rick Redding, back as your host on the Rusty Satellite Show, the home of the most interesting people in the Ville. I've got my work cut out for me this week. I've got some great guests for you. You're really gonna like, and we're gonna spend a small amount of time talking about the just completed midterm elections. And there's some surprises. But one thing that wasn't surprising, the day after, the president acted like a baby. He acted like the little 12-year-old that lives in the neighborhood, the brat. He came off threatening and complaining and taking credit and acting like he won. And anyway, I'm going to avoid that topic. But I will talk about some of the local elections that have gone on and some surprising results there and some not surprising results, including the victories by Mayor Greg Fisher and Congressman John Yarmuth. No surprises on that front. So, but this show is really going to be interesting. My guest in the second part of the show is something very unusual. You probably didn't know that there is a national contest for farriers. Farriers are people put shoes on horses, and I got to go out to a farm in Shelby County and witness the process of putting a shoe on a horse. It's very interesting, very interesting. Conrad Trowe, it may be the best farrier in the world, and he is he's right here in town and a very interesting character. I think you're going to like that part of the show. I think Bill Breimer went with me and suggested him as a guest. There is a video on, I guess it'll be on Facebook, of part of the interview, so you got to check that out. Bill does great work with some of the photographs for this show and some videos, etc. And before I tell you about my first guest, I want to mention some things about my sponsors. Passport Health Plan has always been great to me. They are have me on a project called PassportWellbeing.com. That's a website where you can go read stories that I work on throughout the week. They just posted one about a great barber down at, I think it's 40th and River Park. His name's Rolando Minter, and he still wears a uniform every day. He is a high-quality individual. I really enjoyed meeting him and people like him for the show. And in fact, you can't read this yet, but I met a guy named Todd Moore Baker as well this week. And Todd Moore Baker is a remarkable story because this past January, he got out of prison after 26 and a half years the time he did for some murders that took place a long time ago, and now he's doing great work. He's doing good things to help kids and help people stay on the right path. I'm looking forward to writing that story up, okay? One thing to look forward to, I want to tell you about the Breakfast of Champions. It's coming up. It snuck up on us. The November Breakfast of Champions is Tuesday, November 13th. Our speaker is Kathy Stearman. Kathy Stearman, she is a former FBI executive in the FBI and has a lot of stories about her work with the FBI. Looking forward to that. You can join us out there at the University Club. Bring $20 in cash and yourself. And there's some great people there, so you can network, get a great warm breakfast, and it's a really great event. The Breakfast of Champions been going on. Dick Wilson tells me it's 36 years. I haven't been involved that long, but since the early 2000s, I've been involved in the Breakfast of Champions, a once every 2 months breakfast where we have some great guests and great speakers. So you're welcome to join us. Please do. My other sponsors are very important to me personally. Heiser Health, where I work out 3 times a week up at the Melwood Arts Center. If you have a health issue, or if you're just like I was, a little bit overweight and not really doing that well on eating the right things, go talk to Peggy Heiser. She'll straighten you out. And like me, you can lose 30 pounds and feel a lot better. And also the Eye Care Institute, which has helped me. I had LASIK surgery there because it's the best place to get LASIK surgery. And they got the best pros there. And they can help you with any other eye issue. It's 589-1500 for the Eye Care Institute. All right, my first guest. There's a story that's been in the news around here a long, long time. And I've been anxious to get somebody from Top Golf on the show to talk about that company and that program and what they're doing. And I got a very good afternoon, good evening. Last week they opened a thing called Top Golf Crush, which is at Cardinal Stadium, if you can believe it. And I got to do this. You go at the south end of the end zone. You get to hit irons off the deck up there onto the field. I mean, it is the most exciting thing that's happened on that football field all year. I got to hit a few golf balls in there. Jerry Bailey, the jockey, was there the night I was there because it was right before the Breeders' Cup. And this thing is still open. You can go until November 10th. So not much time. But if you want to get out there in the next few days, you can go participate in a Topgolf opportunity right out there at Cardinal Stadium. But I talked to Jiha Lee in this segment. She is a former LPGA Tour pro. She looks like, I mean, she's young. She must be all of 24, 25 years old, but she is really knowledgeable. She's sort of given up her career on the tour and is now working for Topgolf. And their spokesman is Morgan Schaaf, who's a young lady from Texas, and is all knowledgeable about what's been going on, has been following the story. As you know, the Topgolf organization wants to build a facility out at Oxmoor Mall in place of the old Sears, and it drew a lot of opposition from some neighbors. Now, I've called those neighbors names, and I've made fun of them, and all deservedly so, because they're stuck in the mud. They're standing in the way of progress, and the Planning and Zoning Commission finally listened to them whine and bitch about it for some 12, 15 hours, whatever it was, and finally voted to approve Topgolf's plan to build a facility out there at Oxmoor Mall. Now, those neighbors were complaining about, you know, the lights are too bright, and they think drunk people are going to leave there and drive through their neighborhood and crash into the yards and stuff. It's not going to happen. I would venture to tell those people that there are a lot of places that serve alcohol near the mall, including like BJ's is a great place. You know, there's all kinds of stuff right around there. Their fears are just unfounded. And so that's why I've made fun of them, I guess. I think their attorney called it Godzilla cages or something, some crazy term. And if you saw the video, an old guy named Jack Early got up and talked about, he used the term symbiotic relationships that would happen if Topgolf was allowed to come into a mall. A shopping mall, a place where people go to shop and have fun and do activities. So anyway, hopefully all that controversy is behind us. But I wanted you to hear more about the Topgolf experience. And that's why I have Jiha and Morgan on the show. So let's go on to that interview, and I'll be back with some more stuff right after
that. I admit I used to think people addicted to painkillers just needed to toughen up, until it happened to my daughter. She really needed help. Thanks to Passport, we got it for her. Our doctor and her Passport case manager made sure she got the services and treatment she needed. Together, we got through it.
Find out how you can get Passport at PassportHealthPlan.com/together. Passport Health Plan. We're in this together.
All right, today the Rusty Satellite Show is at a rainy Cardinal Stadium, but things are going to change. I'm with Jiha Lee, who knows all about Topgolf Crush.
I don't know about all about it, but I know a few things.
I heard there's a tour. I want to get on the tour.
Which tour?
Isn't there a playing tour that you can go shoot at these targets?
Yeah.
And be
so
a pro?
We've taken Topgolf Crush around the country. Kansas City, we've been to Nashville, Orlando, Seattle. We're going to be in San Francisco in a couple weeks.
Okay.
So it really is a tour, as
okay.
you describe it.
How do I qualify?
You don't have to qualify. All you need to do is go on topgolf.com/crush and buy a ticket.
Okay, buy a ticket. You qualify by paying. But anyway, Topgolf here in Louisville, it is a very exciting event associated with the Breeders' Cup. What all goes into setting this up?
Well, you see the beautiful targets on the field. So that's one component. The second component is the technology.
Okay.
So we have this amazing TopTracer range technology that allows us to track every golf ball hit from every bay all the way to their destination. And it gives you points based on how good your shot was.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is, I've seen this a few times. It is like magic every time.
Okay. And at a football stadium of all places.
Yeah, we've gone to baseball stadiums, football stadiums. We've been to F1 races, and now we're at a horse race, right? It's a first for us.
Well, what a great job you have setting it up. I understand your old job was on the Pro Tour, right?
Yeah, I played.
This is better.
This is, I don't know about better, it's different. I get to see, my favorite part of this job is getting to see people of all ages and skill levels getting to enjoy the game of golf in a very different format.
Okay.
Whereas, I mean, I competed at a very high level. I've met a lot of very amazing people throughout through the tour, the LPGA
sure.
tour. But being here, whether it's a Topgolf venue or at a Topgolf Crush event, I get to see kids, families, women, everybody getting to hold a golf club in their hands, hit a few balls, and just have a ball doing it. And that really just warms my heart as somebody who's a, I call myself a golf nerd, and
yeah.
I do a lot of things to grow the game of golf, leaving it in a better place than it was, you know, before. This is, I mean, I see it every single day, getting to see people learning the game, enjoying the game in a different format.
Okay, okay. Well, last question about you, though. The decision to stop playing on the tour and do something else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're young. How did you make that decision?
I mean, I played on tour for about 3 years, and I traveled everywhere. And I got to a point where I said to myself, do I want to do this for the rest of my life, or do I want to seek out a new adventure?
There you go.
And I, you know, I had a great education. I have, you know, family and friends who have done different things with their lives, so I started asking around to see what other possibilities there were.
Okay.
And now I'm with an amazing company that allows me to do something different in business, but in golf as well. So.
Very good. Very good. All right. Well, Jihei, I know you've got a lot to do. I'm going to turn to Morgan here and ask her some questions about some stuff. So, Morgan, I was reading about you. You went to Texas State.
I did go to Texas State. Eat 'em up, cats.
And played, what, lacrosse?
I played lacrosse until I got hurt, yeah.
Wow, wow.
Yeah.
And so you didn't have a hard time quitting. You just got hurt and quit.
Yeah, I just tore my ACL, and I was 6 months from graduating, so I decided to focus on just finishing school and not getting hurt again.
All right. Well, you do PR for the whole Topgolf organization, and so you've been in Louisville a lot recently.
Mm-hmm. Been here a couple times, and it's a hidden gem, honestly. I hadn't been to Louisville before. I hadn't really heard anything about it. The closest I had been was Nashville, so it was cool to stop through here, and I've really fallen in love with the city.
Okay. And especially in Hurstbourne, are you scouting houses in Hurstbourne? Because it's a great place to live.
Not quite yet. I think I'm going to keep my home in Dallas for the time being, but I'll let you know.
I heard some of those people out there were actually talking about, because Topgolf was coming like a mile away from their house, that they were going to sell and move.
That would be a shame.
Well, I've had a lot of fun at their expense because those people, you know, were opposed to it. But the good news is I think we're on the path now in Louisville that Topgolf is going to actually happen. Mm-hmm. Tell me what the schedule is for getting installed out there at Oxmoor.
Yeah, so we still have to go through the Planning Commission meeting, and once we get through that, there will be a couple of small, we'll make it through the big hurdle, basically, once we get that, and then from there, it's a couple small hurdles until we are able to officially have everything signed, sealed, delivered, and typically, once we have official approvals ready to go, it can take about 8 to 10 months to build a Topgolf venue, so it would really just depend on when that process was finalized, and then from there, we can kind of hit the ground running and bringing it to life there in Oxmoor Center.
Sounds like best case... next summer?
I would say 2020.
Okay.
Early 2020.
Okay.
Don't quote me, but around that time kind of looks like it could be a possibility.
Okay. And of course, I know the site, and I guess they've got to I mean, if you talk me through that, will they actually tear down the Sears store?
Yeah, they would tear down the Sears store. We would be located right there on that property.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Okay. And stretching out. So, there's a lot of Topgolfs around the country. It's very much talked about. We've heard a lot about it here because of what's going on here. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about the company and what, you know, why you think it's successful.
Yeah, so I think Jihei kind of hit the nail on the head by talking about how it's so cool that we can connect people, whether you're a sports lover, whether you've picked up a golf club, whether you could care less about sports, we've really connected people with the game of golf and just the entertainment experience it brings. About half of our guests are non-golfers. So one out of every two people coming through the doors don't play golf. Okay. So it's really cool for me. I started 4 years ago. I was a marketing manager in our venue. And it was really cool for me as a non-golfer to really have fun and be able to invite my friends out, my family out, and just have a good time, whether or not I'm there for the golf or not. And so I think what people tend to misconceive is, oh, there's golf in their name, it's all golf, I'm not a golfer, I'm not going to go. And that's what we're trying to explain, is that Topgolf is truly for everyone, and we don't discriminate on your age, your height, if you're male, female. We really want to make sure that everyone can come out and have a good time, but and there truly is something for everyone.
But you do have, like, some instruction if somebody needs
it. We do.
Okay.
Yeah, so we have golf pros at all of our venues that are qualified to teach lessons. They do clinics. We have, you know, kids from the age of 3 that are starting lessons to, you know, people in their 80s that never learn, that want to learn how to play golf. Okay. So we do have a lot of avid golfers that come, and then we have a lot of girls that come for girls' night, or, you know, events that host their quarterly meetings and just want to have a social event for their group. I mean, we really see everything on the scale.
Well, it sounds like a tremendous fun, and one of those things that young professionals that we're always talking about alluring to our city are really attracted to. Now, I don't want to go over much of the battle that you have with the Planning Commission, but is that typical in other cities? Have you had to
work
with the authorities in certain ways?
Every city's been different. There's been different hurdles that we've had to push through, but I think that the important thing that we really try to do is just put out the right information and the positive information, and make sure that people aren't basing judgments off of something they saw online from 5 years ago. Here in Louisville specifically, we've worked very hard on updating the plans, making sure that it won't have the negative impact that the neighborhood feels like it would. And we've received over 900 support letters. The residents are a very small portion of the people in Louisville.
Sure.
And the overall kind of tone is that everyone's really excited about this and the jobs it'll bring, the growth it'll bring, and just keeping Louisville top of mind when it comes to economic development. And I think that that's what we're really focused on doing here in Louisville, is spreading the right message and becoming embedded in the community.
Is there, like, a most outrageous bit of misinformation that you hear?
I know there was the
Godzilla cage comment.
That was
a classic.
That's also, a lot of people that haven't experienced Topgolf don't know what the nets are for. The nets are there for safety reason, to keep the balls in the range of sight. So I think there's a lot of little things, but I mean, we hear things every time we try and go somewhere with people that just aren't as knowledgeable about what Topgolf is, because they've never seen it or they've never been to one.
Right. But well, it is a new concept. So my question is, how old is it and how did it get started?
So we started back in 2000, so 18 years now. Two brothers in the UK were playing golf, and they wanted to track where their ball was going because they were losing golf balls a little bit more than they wanted. So they actually took one of those locator chips from a dog collar and put it in the golf ball, and noticed that when they hit it, it registered where it was. So that's kind of where the Topgolf concept came to mind. And then we added, you know, food, beverage. We have 3 locations over in the UK currently, and then we expanded to the US in 2005.
Okay.
And this month we're opening 2 more locations, so we'll be at 51 venues when the year ends.
Wow,
so
51.
We've grown tremendously in the last 18 years, and we're just continuing that growth.
So those little things on the balls tell you where the ball is, right?
Yeah, so each ball has a microchip embedded inside of it. So when you hit, so here it's a little bit different. Here at Crush, it's using our Top Tracer technology, which is the technology you see on TV with PGA Tour events. That's our technology.
Okay.
So it will track the golf ball and tell you how far you hit it, where you hit it, based on the kind of the satellite image of it. But at a venue, we're incorporating Top Tracer into lots of our venues currently. But in a venue, that golf ball, whenever you hit it into a target, once it goes through, it will scan that ball and relay instantly back to your bay. how far you hit it, how many yards, how many points you
and
got based on that. Yeah, and where it is. So you can, you don't lose it in the set. You're like, oh, it went into the yellow target. I'm not that bad. Or you hit it into the white. And you're
so
really
why can't
good.
I get some of those balls and take them out when I hit it in the woods? And that would solve all my problems. I would lose a lot less balls.
You know, I had a really funny voicemail one time of a guy who had a squirrel stealing his golf balls off his back porch. And he called and said that he wanted to buy some of our golf balls to track this squirrel and see where he was taking his balls. And he was like dead serious. And I had to let him down and say, sir, I'm so sorry, but we're, you know, a private company. This is proprietary. We can't sell you any golf balls. And he was like, I just can't track down this squirrel and I'm losing all my golf balls. It's like, maybe you shouldn't keep them on your back porch. And he wouldn't steal them. But we actually, I had that call one time and it was humorous.
Well,
so.
I'm already trying to think of a way to walk away from the Topgolf facility with a couple of those in my pocket.
You don't have to do that. You can just leave them. It's okay.
Well, that's going to be fun. So, well, I'm sorry it's going to be so long till it gets going out here, but this Topgolf Crush thing is, there's a lot of excitement here.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really cool snapshot for people to kind of experience what the game would be like and just the whole experience of just hitting a golf ball into a football stadium. You can never do that. I mean, you could, yeah. But it wouldn't be like this. So I think it'll be really cool for the community to come and enjoy.
Heiser Health, your complete health source for preventative medicine and optimum health. Visit the experts of medical doctors and nurse practitioners so they can evaluate your overall health and your health as you age. Heiser Health uses the primary preventative technique of nutrition with real food and effective exercise. If you qualify, you may need hormone replacement to optimize your health. Call the experts at Heiser Health, 502-882-4252.
All right, there you go. This is Rick Redding back with you on the Rusty Satellite Show, home of the most interesting people in the Ville, and that was a couple of them. Jiha, I tell you, when she went over to the hitting spot and just pulled an 8-iron out with no warm-up, you could tell she was a pro. She was she could really hit the ball. I can't wait to Topgolf. You know, it still has a few hurdles to go through to get going over there at Oxmoor, but hopefully it will happen in the very near future. Looks like a lot of fun. So anyway, that's the story on Topgolf, and remember, you heard all about it on the Rusty Satellite Show. Got a couple of great events coming up in the next few days. I just wanted to tell you about. Maybe you'll want to, you know, join me or something. They're related to the show. You remember Juju Papaye, who was on the show a few weeks ago? His movie we talked about is called River Runs Red. It stars Taye Diggs, and Juju was kind of surprised he got such a big role in it. Well, there's a movie premiere on Friday. I found out about on Facebook, and you can too. You can see it for the first time on Friday right here in Louisville. Another one of my former guests, J.D. Shelburne, he's always playing around town, but he's got a show at the Blind Squirrel out in Middletown on Friday night as well. So that's something coming up. I'm actually, Louisville has a great, great lineup of I hear about all the concerts, you know, constantly coming to town. We're really doing well as a city on attracting memorable acts. You may have overlooked this, the Tedeschi Trucks Band, if you're into that kind of music, with Todd Snyder, one of my favorite singer-songwriters, is coming to the Palace on Thursday. I think I'm going to make an appearance at that. I bought some tickets, and I'm glad to be going to see those people. So those acts, Palace, always a great venue for any kind of show. So a lot going on. And remember, it's next Tuesday, the Breakfast of Champions. We have Kathy Stearman, who is a former FBI agent and executive, and she is bound to have some interesting stories to tell us. $20, you can just show up at Tuesday at 7:30. There's a Facebook page for that as well. And as you know, I've got all kinds of stuff on online. There is rustysatelliteshow.com. There is louisvilleky.com, the pulse of the city, where we post a bunch of news, things that are going on around town. Now, this week, we're taking a break on the Eat, Drink, Talk show, but there was some interesting news, mainly about closings in the restaurant industry, and one positive one. I learned a lot by driving around, you know, and hearing things. But to find out about this story, I just looked out my front door, and I saw that the demolition crews the other day were over at Barbara Lee's Kitchen across the street on Lower Brownsboro Road, and that building is gone. I took a picture of it, got a lot of reaction on Facebook. A lot of people have some strong memories about Barbara Lee's, and some of them involved the rodents and the roaches. But I remember going in there a few times, and it was just a greasy breakfast place. So anyway, it's gone. I'm anxious to see what happens with that spot, that piece of real estate. It's right across the street from where I live. So I'm hoping something good will go in there. You never know. Also, another restaurant it was restaurant closing week. I don't know if you've been to Anselmo's down in the Highlands. Kenny Janetta is a guy I know. He's run that thing. I think he said that it had been open for 7 years. One time I went in there and it had a dish called rattlesnake pasta. It was very, very spicy. And they had this pizza there that was so hot. I know I went in there with Luke, my son Luke, one time, and we could barely eat it. It was so hot. So, but anyway, it is no longer. Kenny, I guess this is the thing to do now. Notified people on Facebook that that story was over. And then I saw in Business First that over in New Albany, the Gospel Bird is going to shut down, which is, another surprising thing. I know I'd been there. I'd had the Eric, the guy that runs it, on the show, on at least on Eat Drink Talk before. And it's very surprising that the Gospel Bird is going to shut down. He didn't mention a date, but it's a process, he said in the story on Business First. And one other closing that may have escaped you, but there's one place in town that I could always count on to get some good trips to the salad bar, and that was Ruby Tuesday's out on Blankenbaker, and that's not there anymore. I drove by there the other day, and the parking lot was closed off. All the signage was gone. I think it may be a sign. We had all those Applebee's closed around here, and that segment of the restaurant industry seems to be struggling a bit. And then I saw this story as while we're talking about food about the headline in Business First: Fund for the Arts is raising $2.3 million for a culinary arts fund. That's an interesting thing, because the Fund for the Arts, you really don't think of as having to do with food, and you don't think of culinary as an art, but it's an interesting program. J.P. Davis, who's been on this show, is raising the money for it, and they're really making an effort, teaming with the James Beard Foundation, to create a program for culinary arts in Kentucky that would be partially funded by the Fund for the Arts. So, interesting thing there. A lot of stuff still going on. That certainly speaks to our efforts in tourism. The story talks about the Bourbon Trail and all the fine restaurants we have in town. So that's another thing that is going on. All right, I got a few things to say about the elections, and I'm mixed. I'm in terms of what has happened locally. Certainly, I wasn't surprised and I wasn't disappointed. Greg Fisher won. I had my guests on here that were running for mayor. Jackie Green got 1,979 votes. Chris Thieneman got 1,296. Sean Van Dievender got 995. Now, all of those are less than 1% of the vote. I was sort of glad to see Angela Leet lose. I didn't like the campaign she ran. She got 37%. So, that's sort of pretty much what was expected. Now, one thing I always pay attention to, I used to cover it a lot, is the Metro Council. And in the Metro Council, it's surprising. And normally, this time it was the odd-numbered districts are all contested. And a lot of times, like 11 or 12 of those races, of those 13 races, they go to the incumbent unopposed or with very little mystery. But there were some close races this time, and the balance of power shifted to Democrats from Republicans, and now it's 17-9 because Leet's old district, District 7, which covers part of St. Matthews, was won by a Democrat, Paula McCraney, African-American, and that's a good sign for Democrats. Also, a big upset, a guy I wasn't paying attention to this race in District 17, because Glenn Stuckel, guy I knew from way back, has been in office since 2002, never really made much noise on the Metro Council, was running for re-election and was upset by a Democrat, Marcus Winkler, and seems like a great replacement over there. And so a good thing for the Democrats. The other new faces, Donna Purvis is replacing Sherry Bryant Hamilton, who she beat in the primaries, and she won overwhelmingly in District 5 in the West End. guy named Mark Fox successfully ran as a Democrat to replace Vicki Aubrey Welch, who is leaving. And same thing with Marianne Butler leaving District 15. Kevin Triplett is a winner. And so in all, there are seven seats that will have new members when they convene again in January. So that's a big change for the Metro Council, one that I think is the biggest change ever that we've had. But, I do want to talk a bit about statewide races. Joe Girth of the Courier wrote a very interesting column this week on about the election and about why, you know, some Democrats were really competitive in very closely watched races in like Texas and Florida and Georgia. And he pointed out the fact that those states have smaller and smaller percentages of white people in it. And then he pulled out this stat, which is eye-opening for me. 85% of the electorate in Kentucky is white. And you know what that means? That means that it's really difficult for Democrats. Democrats have failed to come up with a strategy to reach rural white voters. And as such, we have a governor like Matt Bevin. As such, we have gained one seat in the state house, but we're still, the Democrats still trail 62-38. It's 28-10 in the Senate in Kentucky. Very difficult. The positive thing now, there were some surprises. Phil Moffitt, who has been on this show and is a Republican with whom I disagree on many things, he lost, and so did Ken Fleming, a former Metro Council member. Two Republicans lost their state house races, but in the district where I actually considered running, a district that covers J-Town, Josie Raymond, good for her. A woman ran a strong race and won to take over the seat that was formerly held for a long time by Steve Ricks. So those are some of the highlights of the local elections. The judges' races, there was a big surprise. If you didn't, you don't see this in judges' races. I really don't feel should be elected at all. I don't know how you should pick judges, but this election system, because people that go to the polls don't know anything about the judges. It's all about name recognition usually. But what a shocker. Three different longtime incumbents were defeated. And the most surprising, Sean Delahanty, who was going on like 30 years on the bench and had a sizable war chest and a sizable lead in fundraising, lost to Lisa Langford, a prosecutor. She must have just been out there getting the votes. You must have really done a good campaign out knocking on doors, etc. Judge Todd Hollenbach, that's a name a lot of people are familiar with, Judge Hollenbach the fourth, he lost to a public defender, Julie Kalin. Note, these are women defeating these guys. And Annie O'Connell won. She is Mike O'Connell's daughter, criminal offense lawyer. She beat Judge Daryl Scott Lavery, who had been appointed to the bench by Governor Bevin last year. Three women upset in judges' races. The one that did win, one I was sort of paying attention to, Derwin Webb, the former UofL basketball player, retained his seat on the bench despite a strong challenge from Emily DeGenis, and that race was very, very close. It was like within 1%. So DeGenis spent a lot of money on that. I like both those people, so it was a very close race. So anyway, that's my analysis of the election. Hope you voted. Hope you're not too discouraged if you did. And you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens here, both on a national and local basis. But I think we're in good shape, at least locally, with the makeup of the Metro Council, with Mayor Fisher and Congressman John Yarmuth. So he is the only Democrat among the six U.S. House races in Kentucky to have won. We lost a really close one. Andy Barr defeated Amy McGrath over in Lexington, and that was a sort of hope the Democrats had to win. But as I mentioned, the Democrats, McGrath ran a great race, but couldn't overcome the fact that the Kentucky's Democrats have a tough time in rural white America, and there's a lot of rural and a lot of white in Kentucky, just the way it is. All right, so beyond politics, we're having a good time here on the Rusty Satellite Show. I went out, and you can't get much further from politics with my second guest. His name is Conrad Trow, and he is the best farrier in these parts, I'll tell you. I really enjoyed the opportunity to go out to this farm in Shelby County, and I saw Conrad do his thing with his horse, and he talked about the upcoming competition that is occurring among farriers and people. You know, it's a world that I knew nothing about, and I was glad I got to know it. I'm glad I got to share this with you. Here is my interview with Conrad Trowe.
Well, this is an unusual setting for the Rusty Satellite Show. I'm with Conrad Trowe. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rusty. Thank you for having me.
Welcome me out here to this farm. What's this place called?
This is Angela Ariadne's Equestrian Center.
Okay.
She runs a riding facility out here in Simpsonville and teaches people to ride and is a Pony Club certified facility.
Okay. Well, very cool. It's out here in Shelby County. I just saw you put a shoe on a horse, and you're like the best in the business.
Well, thank you for that. Well, we're just trying to do our best job out there, so just trying to do what's best for the animals.
All right. Well, I'm very nosy about all these horse-related things. So you said that how many farriers are there? And farrier is the profession of shoeing horses.
Correct. That is correct. There's also a blacksmith term. It just that goes into more metalworking things.
Okay.
But in this area, I'd say there's somewhere between 30 and 50 horseshoers, and a lot of them probably I don't even know or recognize as because they do a lot of part time, so you don't always see them around.
Okay.
But that's the number of ones that I know.
But you're a full time,
correct,
farrier.
Correct.
And so, give me an idea of the volume. I have no idea how many horses. Get shoes.
Not all horses get shoes, but we do approximately about 350 horses in a shoeing cycle. And a shoeing cycle is in the summer every 5 weeks because of the way the
every
feet grow.
Every 5 weeks?
Yes.
Okay. And you have to replace them because what?
The main reason for shoeing horses or trimming horses, either one, depending on the reason why they get shoes is depends on what they do or don't do. If they get shoes or not. The reason we have to do them that often is when the rate of growth exceeds the rate of wear.
Okay.
And sometimes they don't grow as much foot, so they'll need shoes for protection. But horses grow about 3/8 of an inch a foot a month.
Wow.
So,
okay, that makes sense. So the obvious question, horses, their feet are different sizes, just like people.
Correct.
So how do you measure it? Like, this guy's not a size 7, right?
No, he's not a size 7. Horses' feet normally come in sizes 000 through 5 or 6 in my practice. And that's just a standard type shoe size that's been around forever. I don't know how it started, but like this guy wears a size 2, which is a pretty big, on the bigger size of feet. And so that's how we go. And we normally, if you make shoes, you can measure it with a tape measure, the circumference of the foot.
Okay.
And you can apply it correctly to the amount of steel you need for that foot.
But you sort of custom, it looks like you're custom fitting the horse.
Correct. All shoes come in a generic shape. They front feet or hind feet. And then you shape them to those feet to fit them more custom to make them fit better.
Okay. All right. Well, tell me about this competition this weekend, because this is like the, we just had the Breeders' Cup in Louisville, the best horses in the world. Now we got the best farriers in the world, right?
Yes. Hopefully we will have a huge turnout for this competition. We are holding our Derby City Horseshoers Association is holding our annual contest and clinic on River Road at Stone Place Stables on Friday and Saturday this weekend. And what happens there, we invite every year, there's our national horseshoeing competition that's held by the American Farriers Association in one of the cities. They move it every year. So this year it's in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And they have three judges. So we invite one of those judges to judge our competition in the thought that it will attract other more competitors to come because they want to see how this judge judges and get his opinion and see how he thinks. So he'll be judging the shoes, trying to get the inside scoop.
That was my dumb question. Is it based on speed or some sort of quality? What makes a good shoe?
A good shoe. The competition is judged. There will be four different classes, and each class is a different length and time.
Okay.
But inside that length, you're asked to do specific types of shoes, and the time is very tight. So you have to practice this at home.
Okay.
And each shoe is judged on quality, the best quality in that time. So, and then we have three different divisions. We have a novice, an intermediate, and an open competitor. So giving everybody a chance to work their way up the ladder over the years. So you're not intimidated by coming to compete if you're a novice guy against some of the best guys.
Okay. Well, like anything else, you're competing against the best, so I see that. People come to watch, though?
Yes, a lot of people come to watch. It's open to the public. It's free. It's no charge. It's in an indoor arena, so it is covered. Okay. It's not heated, but it is covered, so it is chilly. But
it's chilly out here.
There's a lot of forges going on. They create a lot of heat, and it is fun to watch them. And, you know, a lot of people watch a show on TV, Forge and Fire, so it has that type of action to it.
Oh, okay.
A lot of heat, a lot of hammers going. It's noisy, but it's a fun environment to watch.
I saw you when you were chewing this horse over here. There were steam coming off. It seems like that might be uncomfortable for the horse, but no?
No, not really. What we're actually doing is just burning the shoe onto the foot, forming a nice level plane between the shoe and the foot. So, and when I burnt it on, it's seared the top of the foot. We're actually burning the horn tubules, and that's just hair.
Okay.
So it's the same as hair, so we're just burning that. If I overdid it or over-trimmed the horse, then yes, it would hurt because I was just burning it too much.
Right.
So there's a part where you know, but most horses act like he did. As you saw, he didn't
he
have any
calm.
Reaction. when they first get it done, sometimes, depending on the disposition of the horse, they act up a little bit, but most of them get used to it.
Okay. So you've had, like, a horse get mad.
Yes, we've had several.
What happens then?
Sometimes they'll go backwards and shoot back in the cross ties is what's holding him, and run backwards and snort and get all amped up. And then some of them act like Kentwood here, and pretty calm and easy. So a lot has to do with disposition.
You've been kicked?
Quite a few times. I try not to be, but it's sometimes it's unavoidable.
Well, I can certainly imagine. Now, and the other thing is you actually hammer a nail into the foot. Now, I understand that's where the phrase "cut to the quick" comes from.
Yes.
Or
some of that comes to if you're trimming the foot, you can get close to the quick. And when you put a nail into the foot, the nail's supposed to go through the hoof wall, which is somewhere between 1/4 inch to 3/8 of an inch thick. If you keep the nail in that, you're fine. But if the nail comes into the sensitive structures, it's called you quick the horse.
Okay.
The nail hit the quick, and that will cause a lameness or an uncomfortable part for the horse. So
I guess your clients, the owners of the horse, really don't like that.
No, they do not. That's kind of frowned upon. And some horses, you know, you try your best not to do it, and some just have very thin walls, so it's hard, but that's the goal of paying somebody that's done it enough times and not a part-timer and a professional at it. You get hopefully a better job.
Okay. And but we're set up here out of this spot, but I guess you have, basically, you've got this truck. It's got everything on it, right?
Yes.
You go to the horse.
Yes, I just go from farm to farm every day. I have a set schedule, and I just pull up, as we see right here. Everything I need is set up right here in my mobile workshop. It would be probably very hard for everybody to trailer their horses every day to my shop like they used to in the old days.
Okay.
This is a lot more convenient.
Let me get a little bit about your background. How long have you been doing this?
I've been doing this. I started chewing in 96.
Okay.
So I came originally from South Africa, and I came to horseshoeing school in Shelbyville. There used to be a horseshoeing school there called the Kentucky Horseshoeing School.
Okay.
And it has since moved to Richmond, Kentucky. They built a new facility there in the last 5 years. So I went to horseshoeing school there, did my course, went back to South Africa, and did a 4-year apprenticeship.
Okay.
And then decided I had to make a move somewhere. So I came back to the U.S., and I actually worked for the horseshoeing school while I got my visa applications and got my work permits and everything lined out, and I started a practice over here, and I stayed. I did not go home. It's just been a very good business for me.
Yeah, well,
23 years later.
It sounds like it. You talk about young people getting into the business. You don't just go to school and come out and you're
a
farrier.
No, most of the schools are anywhere between 3 months and 2 years, depending on which school and how in depth you want to get in it. But some guys do, but it takes them a long time to even get a good clientele, because you come out of school, you're fresh, and a lot of things you don't really understand. So the ideal is to do an apprenticeship for a year, two, three, or four with somebody.
Okay.
And America is one of the only countries that it's not regulated. You could go to Tractor Supply and buy some nails and horseshoes and become a horseshoer tomorrow if you wanted to.
All right, I might try that. I don't know.
Which is, well, in England, you have to go through a four-year apprenticeship, pass these tests, and do all these things.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm more familiar with, you know, the thoroughbreds, Churchill Downs,
yes,
the races, and I'm sure you do all sorts of types of horses.
Yes.
What are the differences? I mean, a thoroughbred that's worth millions of dollars, you got to be. Is it different shoeing a guy like that than this
to
guy
me,
over here?
To me, it does not make a difference because it's, to me, it costs the same to shoe this guy as it does to shoe a $1 million racehorse, because you still have to do the same quality of job, the best job you can. The pressure is higher on you because the people are looking down on you a lot
say,
more. There's a lot
say,
more
the
pressure.
The trainers are watching you,
yes,
right?
And the pressure.
And they want to make sure nothing happens to their horse.
But at the end of the day, win or lose, you still have to do the same job on those horses. So after doing it for a long time and doing it, and I do about 150 racehorses.
Okay.
You just get used to it. That's just, to me, I hate to put it this way, but it's just another horse that I have to take care of.
Okay.
So if it's somebody's backyard pony or somebody's $1 million racehorse, they still deserve the same type of treatment.
So do you go to racetracks? Like, do you go to Churchill Downs?
I used to have quite a few at Churchill. My owners or trainers have moved out to Skylight and High Point Training Centers in Oldham County. So I do most of my racehorses out there.
Okay. Okay. Well, it sounds very exciting. One of those behind the scenes things nobody knows about.
Exactly.
A crazy world
it is. People think when you tell them what you do, they think, oh, that's a lost art, you don't see many people around that do it. And little do they know, there's more horses than ever, and there's a need. It's one of those jobs that a machine I don't think could ever take over.
And you said that there's a recent study that said Kentucky has the most horses.
Yes, if I'm not mistaken, Kentucky has moved back up to one of the, it's in the top three to be.
Okay.
I know that for a fact. But somebody told me actually 2 days ago that Kentucky was up at number one again. So with Texas and California. So it's always, compared to the size of state, we're tiny compared to those two states. So
Well,
hopefully we are at number one.
Plenty of horseshoes to fill.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Cameron, good luck this weekend.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Rick.
Hope the competition goes well for you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right, a big thank you to Bill Breimer, who introduced me to his brother-in-law, Conrad Trow, out at the out of that farm in Shelby County, and I learned all about farrier and what farriers do. Interesting that there are more horses in Kentucky than any other state, according to Conrad, and it's a big event going on. I can't imagine it being a spectator event, watching these guys put shoes on horses, but anyway, I thought you'd find it interesting. I certainly did. And thanks again to Conrad and Bill for making that happen. And I hope you enjoyed our first guest, the young ladies from Topgolf. And you still got a few days to go out there to Cardinal Stadium and hit a ball off the flight deck. Not the flight deck, off the south deck onto the field, which is a lot of fun. It was cold out there at the farm, and I hear it's getting colder this weekend. So it's a good time to stay and watch TV. I tell you, I've been watching. There's so much on television to watch. I started watching the final season of House of Cards, which is I only saw the first episode, but Robin Wright's powerful performance there. I started watching Homecoming, which is a serial that is on Amazon Prime, I think, starring Julia Roberts. It's based on a podcast, so it's a podcast-related thing. That's pretty cool. My other favorite shows going on right now, Ray Donovan, is just started its season, and Shameless is midway through. The other things I watch when I try not to miss Bill Maher on Friday. I can't wait to see what he has to say about the election, although he might be going on break. I'm not sure. And so of course, John Oliver's show. There's a couple of great shows on Showtime. If you're interested in politics, there's a thing called The Circus. All kinds of things. I wish I wasn't so busy. I'd like to watch more TV. I really would. But most of the time, I am. I'm busy. I've been busy working out. Playing racquetball, doing very well at it. Thank you. Thanks to my program with Heiser Health. I'm 30 pounds lighter than I was the last time I played, and that really makes a difference on the court. Thanks to Peggy Heiser at Heiser Health for that. You can give her a call,
find out how to get healthy. Other sponsors, the Eye Care Institute and my friends at Passport Health Plan, thanks so much for being a part of the Rusty Satellite Show. This experiment started 5 years ago, and this is show number 279. That's consecutive weeks in a row, ladies and gentlemen. I say, I don't know if that's an accomplishment of anything but persistence, that I sort of refuse to not do a show in any week in that time period, which started in, I think it was July of 2013. We're still here, still doing two guests a week, and I am sure that I'm not going to break that streak this week. I've got some good things lined up for the near future on the Rusty Satellite Show. As always, I'm Rick Redding, host of the Rusty Satellite Show, home of the most interesting people in the Ville. You can catch my stuff on LouisvilleKY.com, and we have Twitter. Ricky Redding is me on Twitter, and Rusty Satellite. If you've got a suggestion for a guest or something going on in Louisville you'd like me to pay attention to, just give me a call or contact me through Facebook at Rick Redding. Send me a friend request, and provide you're not too strange looking or live in some other country, I will accept your friend request. I promise. I really will. And would love to talk to you. So that's what the Rusty Satellite Show is all about. Thanks for tuning in. If you found it on iTunes, be sure and tell other people about it. That's how we grow and make sure that people know what's going on here. I really enjoy doing the show. And thanks to you for tuning in. I'll be back with another Rusty Satellite Show next week.
Thanks for listening to the Rusty Satellite Podcast with your host, Rick Redding. Next week, Rick will be right back here on Louisville.am with another stellar lineup of great guests. You can let Rick know what you think by sending an email to rick@louisvilleky.com. He's on Twitter, too, at Ricky Redding. For more information about the show, including photos of Rusty Satellite Show guests, go to LouisvilleKY.com, the pulse of the city.
Time I